All right, so I know this probably doesn't apply to any of you guys here, but I was wanting to talk about disappointments. Don't know if that really hits anyone else. Yeah. So I'll just practice on you guys because I know you guys don't have any disappointments. There's so many different ways that we deal with disappointments. I have some really good friends this week. There were like three in the last week that were dealing with major disappointments, and none of them are here. But when I was just listening to their brokenness and their frustration and their hurt, and I was praying, I was like, how do you even respond to this? You know, there's everything from being disappointed that something didn't happen the way you thought it was, little things to you shut down because your whole life has been shattered type of disappointment. So depending on the level of our brokenness, we can be hurting for days or for years. So I was thinking about some common responses that we have when things don't turn out the way we expected. The first one I thought was that despair, depression, hopelessness cycle. This is when we give up. We lock our dreams away with the attitude that, oh, well, guess they were never meant to be. Or maybe we weren't good enough. Or maybe we weren't faithful with our little things, so God couldn't really entrust us with the big things. All these lies do really is create this downward spiral of inner judgment. And it's a slippery slope that is, it feels so impossible to ever get out of. So that cycle, despair, depression, hopelessness, despair, depression, hopelessness. This is probably my most common response to disappointments. Two, you've got those people that will control or manipulate. Those are the people that decide, I'm sick of waiting on God, so I am just going to make things happen for myself. We end up exhausted, frustrated, and defeated because we can't create what our heart is really longing for. You know, no matter how hard you work, you can't manufacture God's anointing on things. So I don't know if you can think of a time in your life when you've tried to create what you wanted and you knew God's anointing wasn't there and you end up just defeated and exhausted and angry. And I think the biggest shame of when we get in that mode is the wake of wreckage of people that we hurt behind us because we're trying to force something that wasn't meant to be. And then there's the anger at God blame game. That's that fun place where you get to bounce back and forth like a ping pong ball on a table straight from the pit of hell itself. Either God failed you or you failed God or maybe others failed you, and you spend so much time and energy trying to figure out whose fault it is that your life didn't turn out the way you expected, and you vacillate between these faith-destroying thoughts, like God failed, or soul-destroying thoughts, like I failed. And in the end, it doesn't really matter because either way, you end up without hope. So you just stay angry because it's something you feel like you can hold on to. So these were like the three major, and I probably have done all of these, and sometimes we cycle through these. You know, you can look back and go, wow, I've done all of those. When you do them for a short period of time, I don't think it's so bad. It's when you find yourself stuck in a rut, either of one of these or a cycle of these for long periods of time. And there might be other reactions I didn't mention here. These are just the ones that God kind of was showing me, probably because the ones I relate to. And I'm sure there's those amazing saints out there who respond always in a gracious and patient manner. Are there any here? Yeah, I didn't think so. I don't know you. You might have been one. I think the majority of us relate to these listed. The Bible says, hope deferred makes the heart grow sick. It's Proverbs 13:12. So what do we do with our sickened hearts? How can they be healed? What if we're too sick to even hope anymore? What if it hurts too much to hope? What if we're too angry or too scared, too tired to even try to hope? Who can heal the sickened heart? So I want to introduce a new way of looking at a familiar verse. Who brought their Bibles? Or electronic Bibles, yeah. A lot of you guys will be familiar with it, but open up to Hebrews 11. I was listening to this pastor talking this week about the many faces of faith, and it really struck me what a freeing message he was sharing. So let me open that up real quick here. I guess I should have been prepared and opened.
Hebrews 11.
It is the Hall of Faith. You guys familiar with this? Okay, so I'm going to read through this really quick. Not all of it, parts of it. What is faith? It is the confident assurance of what we hope for is going to happen. It is the evidence of things we cannot see. God gave his approval to people in days of old because of their faith. By faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. It was by faith that Abel brought a more acceptable offering to God than Cain did. God accepted Abel's offering to show that he was a righteous man. And although Abel is long dead, he still speaks to us because of his faith. It was by faith that Enoch was taken up to heaven without dying. Suddenly he disappeared because God took him. But before he was taken up, he was approved as pleasing to God. So you see, it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that there is a God and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. It was by faith that Noah built an ark to save his family from the flood. He obeyed God, who warned him about something that had never happened before. By his faith, he condemned the rest of the world and was made right in God's sight. It was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land that God would give him as his inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going, and even when he reached the land God promised him, he lived there by faith, for he was like a foreigner living in a tent. And so did Isaac and Jacob, to whom God gave the same promise. Abraham did this because he was confidently looking forward to a city with eternal foundations, a city designed and built by God. It was by faith that Sarah, together with Abraham, was able to have a child, even though they were too old and Sarah was barren. Abraham believed that God would keep his promise, and to a whole nation came from this one man, Abraham, who was too old to have any children, a nation with so many people that, like the stars of the sky and the sand on the seashore, there is no way to count them. All these faithful ones died without receiving what God had promised them, but they sought all from a distance and welcomed the promises of God. They agreed that they were no more than foreigners and nomads here on earth. And obviously, people who talk like that are looking forward to a country they can call their own. If they had meant the country they came from, they would have found a way to go back. But they were looking for a better place, a heavenly homeland. That is why God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a heavenly city for them. It was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice when God was testing him. Abraham, who received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his only son Isaac. Though God had promised him, Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted. Abraham assumed that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead. It was by faith that Isaac blessed his two sons, Jacob and Esau. He had confidence in what God was going to do in the future. It was by faith that Jacob, when he was old and dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and bowed in worship as he leaned on his staff. And it was by faith that Joseph, when he was about to die, confidently spoke of God's bringing the people of Israel out of Egypt. He was so sure of it that he commanded them to carry his bones with them when he died. It was by faith that Moses' parents hid him for 3 months. They saw that God had given them an unusual child, and they were not afraid of what the king might do. It was by faith that Moses, when he grew up, refused to be treated as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to share the oppression of God's people instead of enjoying the fleeting pleasures of sin. He thought it was better to suffer for the sake of the Messiah than to own the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to the great reward that God would give him. It was by faith that Moses left the land of Egypt. He was not afraid of the king. Moses kept right on going because he kept his eyes on the one who is invisible. It was by faith that Moses commanded the people of Israel to keep the Passover and to sprinkle blood on the doorposts so that the angel of death would not kill their firstborn sons. It was by faith that the people of Israel went right through the Red Sea as though they were on dry ground, but when the Egyptians followed, they were all drowned. It was by faith that the people of Israel marched around Jericho 7 days and the walls came crashing down. It was by faith that Rahab the prostitute did not die with all the others in her city who refused to obey God, for she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Well, how much more do I need to say? It would take too long to recount the stories of the faith of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and all the prophets. By faith, these people overthrew kingdoms, ruled with justice, and received what God had promised them. They shut the mouths of lions, quench the flames of fire, and escape death by the edge of the sword. Their weakness was turned to strength. They became strong in battle and put whole armies to flight. Women received their loved ones back from the death. Again, from death. I think we'll stop there. Okay, so Hall of Faith. Oh, wow. All these amazing stories, these amazing people. How many of you guys have read that before? How many of you guys have noticed a few discrepancies in how this describes the stories of what happened and what we read happened in the Old Testament? You guys ever noticed that? Well, what I'm referring to is, let's see, let's look at, okay, I like this one. This isn't really so much a discrepancy, but let's look at Abel. It says, by faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. I'm just wondering if Abel brought what he brought because that's what he had access to. Was it great faith that he brought? He tended the animals. So that's what the sacrifice was. But God says, ooh, great faith, okay? Let's go a little bit farther down there. Where is that? Okay, Sarah. It says, and by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she was she considered him faithful who made the promise. Do you guys remember how that really went down? Okay, Sarah scoffed, right? She totally laughed at the angel who said, she's like, yeah, right, whatever, I'm too old. And what happened when she got tired of waiting? She thought, oh, it's never going to happen. She said, here, sleep with my maidservant. She controlled and manipulated to create another.
She did that before the angel came.
Did she do that before the angel came? Thank you. Did you do? Okay. Okay. Still got tired of waiting.
Yeah.
I think it's this whole idea of she obviously was a barren woman who wanted to have kids and got tired of waiting for it to happen naturally, controlled and manipulated to get it, which created a huge mess in the long run. But when she was told, right, she scoffed. She's like, yeah, how could that possibly happen? But it says that by this great faith. Like in my head, great faith would have been like, I believe. That's amazing. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, there you go. Mary wasn't in that list. Mary said, there's, I know that. She's like, hey, people, what about me? I actually did have great faith. Can I want to be in the list? Could you do like a secondary list? Maybe like an annex list?
The B list.
The B list. Yes. Yeah. The part two, right? Like the wow. They'll have like wow one and wow two. Wow music. Be like that. Okay, let's see. Let's find some other ones. Okay, further on. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regards to their future, but he was tricked into blessing the wrong son by Jacob's deception. And yet Jacob makes the list too. He's on the list. I'm just saying, these people weren't, when we think about, ooh, great faith, these were amazing people. They weren't. They were just people. They were like us. This one's my favorite. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. You just have him like, I refuse to be known. I'm turning my back on the riches because of I have this right. No, he killed someone and then got scared, like tried to hide it. When he got found out, ran off, took off. It wasn't like great faith, but I like how God's eyes, he's like, oh, instead of being mistreated along with the people of God, you know, he would rather be mistreated than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And do you remember when God asked him to go back? He's like, oh, I can't do, no, I need a helper. Can someone else say it? Why don't you have someone else say it? Like, and God finally says, okay, you know, I'll send so-and-so to talk for you. But it wasn't like he had this amazing faith either. He was just a guy. Where am I at there?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, in them being characterized this way,
right?
Does that show how God sees them?
That's where we're going with this. That's where we're going. Him. God gives all these people. Let's say, okay, well, I'll go a little bit farther. I'm getting there. I am. We're going to talk about that. That's the whole point. You're ahead of me. You're so good. You see where I'm going with this. Okay, and then he talks about the Israel by faith, you know, walking through the Red Sea. Again, we know Israel, they whined, they complained. They were like, oh, it was so much better back in slavery. They're like, did God just bring us out here to die? You know, he's just, because the graves were full somewhere else, so he's going to, yeah. But yeah, here God says by great faith, they were let out into freedom. By great faith, they were given that city because they marched around the walls. Well, after what, 40 years of wandering in the desert because they whined and complained. So, and then last and not least, my wow, there's so many. There really is. Gideon. Okay, they list Gideon in there who kept asking for proof from God. It wasn't like God said one time and he's like, I believe. He's like, I think I'm going to need a little test just to make sure that that really. And okay, don't get mad at me. I know you did that one, but can we do one more? And then, okay, really don't get mad, but I just really want to cover all my bases here. That's great faith. Okay, so Gideon does that. You know, I don't know. I wish we knew more about Rahab and how she knew what she knew. But just the fact that she was a prostitute tells you she had a whole bag of dirty laundry in her life that we don't know about. I would love to know her history. But, yeah, there's untold stories there.
You know, now that I'm thinking, we're hearing more about trafficking and mm-hmm, all that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Samson, he's listed in there. He let his lust for a woman deceive him and ruin him. And he's listed as having great faith. And last but not least, good old David, a murderer, adulterer, and yet still a friend of God. Now look at these, what appears to be discrepancies to us. And we look at the facts as we read them and how they translate into something else completely when filtered through God's definition of what faith looks like. And here we go, where Tracy was ahead of me. I submit to you that faith looks different to God than it does to us. Despite their failures, their glaring faults, the missteps, God showed his approval and his favor was upon them. So here's where I'm going with this. Sometimes we look at our responses to our broken hearts, to our disappointments, as failures, as a lack of faith. The lie is that somehow we failed the test and we've disappointed God or we've proved to be unworthy somehow of receiving the prize. It is an absolute waste of time, I believe, to try to figure out a formula as to why things don't always work out the way we expected them. Anytime you excessively focus inward, you're bound to develop an unhealthy, man-centered theology. Because there's a whole lot of junk loaded up in there. When you spend too much time digging around in it, you're going to feel gross. You're going to start getting stinky. So we have to take the focus off of ourselves and your failures and your assumptions and come to this very simple conclusion. No matter how you came to this place, this is where you are right now. Let go of the past and quit beating yourself up and simply say, I am right where I'm supposed to be at this time in this place. And accept that you can't change how you got here and that whatever things you perceive as weaknesses on your part may not be how God sees it. His definition of great faith is so much broader and more forgiving than ours is. So maybe, just maybe, this dream of yours that you cling so desperately to has nothing to do with you at all. Maybe God entrusted you with a piece of a greater puzzle that he is putting together. And maybe, just maybe, he has a plan much bigger than you can imagine. So whether you are a barren woman with a mother's heart, or a foreigner in the desert longing for a homeland, or building an ark with no clouds in sight, I encourage you to be gentle with yourself. I think it's okay with God that we cry and complain and rant and toil working so hard, as long as we remain honest with him about where we're at. And that's why David, as messed up as he was a friend of God. Because he was very real about how he was feeling, be it praising or despairing. It was a little of both. Within moments, sometimes it appears to us, I'm in the depths of despair. My God is so amazing! So that was before medication, apparently. And I really think now he would be diagnosed with probably several things, right? But he was honest about it. And he acknowledged that no matter what, God was God. and that he alone was going to remain when all else burned away. When nothing else remained, God remained at the end of the day. That's really what it boiled down to. David got that. So when we take our eyes off of us and our broken dreams and we look up into his face like David did and remember how much he adores you and how much he loves you, when we remember who we really are, we've spent a lot talking about that, glorious and brilliant, powerful and made righteous by the blood of his son, it gives us that perspective change that we so desperately need. I lost my train. I lost my part here. Being in God's presence is like getting a dose of fresh, clean air after scavenging through a dumpster. That's, I think, when you spend so much time looking at yourself and, I should have responded better and I shouldn't have done that. And why am I, God must be disappointed with me because I'm so frustrated or I'm so depressed. Or we sit there and we microanalyze ourselves. And you really do just need a breath of fresh air and to take your eyes off of yourself and your innards and look on God's face. And you can say, this is who I really am. And even though I feel overwhelmed right now with disappointment, I remember that even if all he ever did for me was love me, it's enough. And even if all I ever did on this earth was love him back, it's enough. Can you imagine how that would move the heart of God? To know that just his presence in your life, just his presence is enough. There's a book called God Calling, and the author says, the longing of the human heart to be loved for itself is a something caught from the great divine heart. We all just want to be loved for ourselves. We want someone to be with us just because they want to be with us, not because we can give them something, right? Where do we think we got that from? That came from God's heart. He wants that too. Sometimes it's good to go, not because it's good to go with him with our needs and our wants and our prayers, of course. But how often do we go to him just to be in his presence and say, man, God, even if you were all I ever got, even if just your love was it is more than enough. This is such a good place to be just with you right now, right here. I don't even want anything from you. I just want to be in your presence. Like how amazing that is to his heart to hear a child say that. I encourage you guys, take some time and put aside your broken dreams and your deferred hopes and your anger and your despair and just look on the face of a good God who just loves you and thinks you're amazing in your faith. And just rest in his love. Let him love you and love him back. Let go of expectations. Let go of deadlines. Let go of control and acknowledge that even if you never had any of your desires met, you love him. Because if the enemy can shame you by making you think that you somehow cosmically failed or were measured and found wanting or weren't as needed in the kingdom or weren't as important as another, he wins. He keeps you from going straight to the source of where all dreams are born and where all broken dreams are healed. When you realize you always have God's approval, even in the midst of your biggest faults or failures, like the people we were talking about and their responses, it should strengthen you to boldly step into your Father's throne room, march up to his chair, climb into his lap, and cry out your frustration. You aren't wrong for your reaction to disappointment, but you have to choose your response to it now. Do you continue to let it keep you from entering into the fullness he has for you? Do you allow the enemy to keep you hurting and disabled from being an effective warrior? Or will you spend some time in his presence and let him heal your sickened heart? Let him speak life into your broken dreams. Let him breathe hope into your life again. Because hope is an integral part of faith. The definition of faith, you guys know, the confident assurance that what we hope for is going to happen. Hebrews 11:1. So confident assurance is trust. Confident, I'm confident in you. I'm assured in you. I have trust in you and hope. So when trust and hope meet together, that's faith. So I think that's why these people make the Hall of Faith. despite the response, God, we look at someone's response and says, oh, that's great faith. Oh, they had great faith. They didn't freak out at all. They were peaceful. They had faith. And I don't think that's what God's definition of faith is. It's not how you respond. It's that deeper knowing. These people, regardless, they were angry. They were angry at God. He was still part of the equation. They still knew. They trusted in him. They knew. They were angry at him. Whatever. He was still a part of it. I think that's what God looks at and says, wow, what great faith. That despite their anger, despite their despair, despite all these things they're feeling, I'm a part of this equation. They know that it has to come from me. I think that's maybe even just a part of it. His definition of faith is so much bigger than ours. But if we could give ourselves some grace and give others grace to say faith looks very different to God than it does to us. So maybe I don't have to feel so ashamed of what I have looked at in my life as failure. Maybe God has looked at that and says, what great faith. And throw off the shame that's keeping you from going into his presence and say, wow, he thinks I have great faith. I don't have to be ashamed. I have his approval still, even in this response, even in this reaction, even in my being angry and yelling at someone or being frustrated and trying to take matters into my own hands. God's okay with that. I'm still good with him. All right. So we are going to spend some time in prayer and worship. And I want you guys to take this time to let him know that he's enough and that you trust him. And accept that brokenness is seen by him as an opportunity to be strong through you. Right? 2 Corinthians 12:9. Do you guys know that one? Look it up if you don't. 2 Corinthians 12:9. Your weakness is an opportunity for him to reveal his strength. So he is not at all intimidated by your brokenness. He sees your heart despite its woundedness and says, there is my child with great faith. So we can turn that off. We can turn some worship music on. And we're just going to spend some time in prayer collectively. And I encourage you guys, if you want to take some alone time or if you want to come to someone else for prayer, but we'll start, or if you want to pray out loud in the group, we'll start just kind of praying together and see where that goes.